The last three historic books of the Old Testament are the books that we are preaching through. Ezra, Esther, Nehemiah, the last three prophets were Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. I sometimes have tried to figure out why the men who chronologically put this thing together, canonizing this book, put some of the books where they put them. And that's why I say that the poorest way in the world to read the Bible is to read it through. You're reading books with no connection with what went before and what went after. Ezra, Esther, Nehemiah are the last historic books before the Old Testament closes, and that gap of time between the closing of that book and the prophetic voice of Malachi and John the Baptist coming on the scene in the New Testament. And I repeat, the prophets on the scene were Haggai and Zechariah, who preached to strengthen the hands of the people that had given up under government pressure. During the events of the book of Ezra, and in our preaching through the books, we've not yet come to the time in Nehemiah's ministry when Malachi becomes the voice of prophecy to strengthen the hand of Nehemiah, and Ezra will be encountered again in the revival, sharing ministry with Nehemiah in the latter part of Nehemiah's book. The circumstances encompassing these books embrace happenings over in Babylon and happenings in Israel or that land surrounding Jerusalem. Most of you know you can't understand the books if you don't have the background of Isaiah and Daniel, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the historic books recorded in the Chronicles and the Kings that tell of the carrying away into bondage of the people that are coming back in small percentage thereof to rebuild God's temple and the walls of God's city at Jerusalem. Three successive waves of people were carried into bondage under Jehoiakim, under Jeconiah, and under Zedekiah. Ezekiel is prophesying at the time that Zedekiah, the last king to fall of Jerusalem, is carried into bondage. And the 70 years that Jeremiah had prophesied would be the duration of the bondage usually is counted from the time of Zedekiah's bondage. But there were people in Babylon that were carried away under each of those attacks and taking of slaves. Jehoiakim, about 607 B.C., and Jeconiah, right after the turn of the century, around 599 B.C. It's 588, 11 years later, that Nebuchadnezzar takes Zedekiah into bondage and blinds him. Mordecai is the hero of the book of Esther. Esther, raised by him because her father and mother were slain, is a heroine. Mordecai was carried into bondage when the attack came on Jeconiah. He and the Jews in that land, coming from each of these three periods of captivity, were the ones that God sent his appeal to. When the 70 years of bondage was passed, as prophesied by Isaiah, who named the king, and is prayed for by Daniel, who saw in the books that it was to be only 70 years. God stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, as you know, we've been preaching through these books. And out of 650,000 in bondage, less than 50,000 responded and came home. Later, after the temple was built, and that's the passages that we've been in for the last few weeks, another 9,000 will come, led by Ezra, to strengthen their hands. That means less than 60,000, less than 10% of the 650,000 children of God respond to God's call. Now, we're preaching through these books because we believe we're entitled to reach into God's shelf of promise, remembering that God is no respecter of persons in His promises to His children, that no promise of God is denied to us if we'll pick it up in faith. And we're building here at this work for God's honor. That which God established and that which fell into disrepair, doesn't matter why. Doesn't even matter that we didn't cause it. What matters is that God's work is tumbled down. And we are God's children, aware of it. And we are God's children with strength and facilities that can be used by God, and it is our task to jump at the chance to be God's instrument. Less than 10% did it in this Old Testament passage. And I paused in the book of Ezra on the phrase, the hand of God. The immediate application was the hand of God on the 9,000 as they marched across the terrible wilderness. But I've expanded it for several weeks to simply talk of God's care for and God's control of and God's attention to minute detail in the care of His people because they're in His hand. Time for me then in the journey to do, and I wondered when I'd do it, a little side road to that people in Babylon to whom the message went, go home and build. What right did God have to uproot those 600,000 people, 650,000? Disturb their work and their plans and their careers and their comforts and their homes and their families. They were in His hand. And that leads me to the book of Esther. Now, I won't preach the whole book, which means it's one of those sermons, and I have many like this, where the text takes me a while. The sermon won't take too long once I get through the text. If you want the exact history, the timing for the book of Esther is between the coming out of those people that came under Zerubbabel, under Joshua and Zerubbabel, not Zerubbabel, Joshua and Zerubbabel, prior to Ezra coming with his 9,000. In between that first trip when they laid the foundation of the temple and the finishing of the temple, and Ezra coming with 9,000, the events of the book of Esther took place among those in the captivity. Came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, the book opens. This is Ahasuerus, which reigned from India even unto Ethiopia, over 127 provinces. Man, what a domain. He decided to make a feast, the fifth verse says. 7 days. They had enough to drink with typical male ego. He decided he was going to show off his wife. And his wife Vashti, the queen, had made a feast for the women. And again, let me parenthetically say, as I preach through all these books a second time now, Will you pray? When we come to that point where Nehemiah dedicates the wall and hangs the gates, that our rebuilding effort will be over, and on that Sunday, I can say the debt, which is the crumbled down walls of faith at this place, will be paid in full. I'm letting God lead me through these books, and I want faith expressed by the people that when we come to that point, I can, as Nehemiah, say the work is finished. We're not there yet. And I want you to see the hand of God. Vashti the queen made a feast. Seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, which is a nice way of saying you've drunk, the old scoundrel. He sent word to bring Vashti to show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look upon. But the queen refused to come, the first woman's liberate. She refused to come at the king's command. Man, did that make the old boy mad. The king was very wroth, and his anger burned in him. The king said to his wise men, "What shall we do to this woman? And can't you see these insecure men sitting around like my proverbial gimlet-eyed lobsters? Man, if you let her get away with this and my old lady hears about it, every woman in the whole land will get liberated. Show her who's boss. Get rid of her." So, the king got rid of her. Second chapter. Got rid of that chapter pretty fast. They had a long text. After these things, when the wrath of the king Ahasuerus, anybody marry a guy with that name's crazy. Ahasuerus was appeased. He remembered Vashti and what she had done, decided he wanted another woman. So he sent a decree. "Look through the whole land and find me a replacement." That's not an exact quotation, but that's the first two or three, four verses. Now in Shushan, the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. That I told you earlier, that was the second wave. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful. Mordecai had raised her as his own child. When Esther was brought into the king's house, the maiden pleased him. Mordecai warned her, "Don't you let him know you're a Jew. Don't talk about your kinsmen." And the king chose her. Took him a whole year to get her purified with myrrh and sweet odors. You know, some people teach the Bible in such a way, out of context. I've been wondering why somebody hasn't come along with the theology that engagement requires a whole year of the woman taking a bath in myrrh and sweet odors. The text being Esther 2:12. Try that on for marriage counseling, Dan. When my interns come in to me and say, "Doc, I found the desire of my eye and I want to get married," I say, "Is she taking a bath for a year?" And the king loved Esther. It worked. 17th verse. "And the king loved Esther above all women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight." Well, it doesn't say she smelled good. So that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Ashtar. And he had a great feast. In those days he had a couple of scoundrels sitting at the gate. Rebels. And I want you to notice how important these three little verses are. I have picked out of the book of Ezra what a subsequent king is going to say when he says, "Why should there be wrath in my kingdom?" God's people are not given the government any trouble anywhere on matters of substance. It's only when Caesar or Ahasuerus or Artaxerxes or the attorney generals or anybody else in government tries to put their foot on God's people and intrude into God's territory that the wrath is aroused. Here in three verses we see the substance of Mordecai's loyalty. These two Quislings, Bigthan and Teresh, who kept the door, sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus, which means they wanted to assassinate him. The thing was known to Mordecai, the Jew, at that time the unknown, acting foster father of Esther. He finds out about these traitors. He's not trying to make points at all. He found out about them, and when he found it out, he told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. So into the Chronicles was Mordecai's loyal action to expose these two scoundrels. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out, therefore they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king, and there rested. Bureaucrats seldom pay attention to what they get. We gave the FCC 5 hours of tapes of our Fountain of Faith mortgage payoff Sunday. I've never seen or heard of them since, and to my knowledge, they've never looked at them. It is not that they want to find out the truth. They want to prove their power to get everything from you. And these bureaucrats here don't read the Chronicles until God forces it later on. But put those Chronicles in the sight of your mind, which recorded truth about Mordecai. After these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman? Time goes on, he's got a new wife, now he's going to get himself a new lieutenant, a new executive, a new commissioner, a new attorney general, Haman. And he gave this Haman a seat above all the princes that were with him, and all the king's servants that were in the king's gate. Now that's where Mordecai sat. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Now can't you see the whole crowd? Down they go when Haman goes by. No, Mordecai is stiff-necked. Then the king's servants, which were in the king's gate, said unto Mordecai, "Why transgressest thou the king's commandment?" And they wouldn't let up on him. I've shared this with you before, but I know God sent me 8,000 miles to hear a little old lady in a jungle 100 miles north of Manila preach on this, and I can never read the passage that I don't remember her. She said, "Like water on a rock, his fellow Jews and the fellow servants of the king spake," underline the word, "came to him." Why are you so stiff-necked? Don't you know you're going to cause trouble for all of us? It isn't very much trouble to just sort of nod your head.
Why are you so hard-headed? Daily, they just work on him. Daily, I can hear her little squeaky voice. Haman would go by and pick up myself. Why transgressors out?
I didn't put it in. Mabel Willits did that day. She said, I can imagine that one day he got enough of that dripping on his head, saying, why? He said, because hundreds of years ago, God laid down a commandment, thou shalt not bow thy knee to anyone other than me. That's enough why for anybody. Ye hearken not unto them. He wasn't a committee man. He wasn't cooperative. They told Haman. They told him he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. You think the Attorney General's mad? You think the Attorney General really believes anything's been done wrong at this church? You think he would have signed a stipulation to leave us alone if he did? You think the FCC thinks anything wrong has been done? They come out with 4 projects and we answer them. We give them 16 projects and we answer them. We answer every question they have asked. What is it they are trying to prove? They can make us bow. That's it in a nutshell. Period. We ain't bowing. And they're mad. He thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone. Well, they'd showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews. Old Scott won't bow. So FCC sends out a blitzkrieg and says, bring me all the people and all the interns of Faith Center and Westcott Christian Center and Sunset Mausoleum, which includes at least 35,000 interns. We have 35,000 dead bodies interned in Sunset Mausoleum. They now expect me to dig them up. I'm going to recommend I put them in there with them. Easier to dig a hole for them than to undig the others, wouldn't you say? How many of you saw on TV? It's interns they want, isn't it? And the technical word for burial is internment. You're glad I thought of that. Since Mordecai won't bow, we'll get them all. Since Scott won't bow, we'll get them all. And we're going to give them some of them. So in the month of Nisan, 7th verse, they cast pur, that is, they cast lots before Haman. And they decided on a day. And Haman said unto the king, don't you give me a court order. There's a certain people scattered abroad, and he tells a big lie on him. He signs an affidavit, in short, and swears wrongdoing that never occurred. They're scattered abroad. Their laws are diverse from other people. They don't keep the king's laws. Therefore, it's not for the king's profit to suffer them. It's not in the public interest to let them go on and keep doing what they're doing. So if it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. And I'll pay 10,000 talents to the guy that goes and destroys them and takes all their goods and puts it in the king's treasury. because it's public property anyway. The Attorney General said so. The king took his ring, gave it to him, and said, get on with it. Letters were sent to all posts, name of the day that it was going to happen, and the king and Haman sat down to drink some more. The city where the Jews lived was perplexed. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, he rent his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes. That's three of them down. Text is still going. Fourth chapter now. Mordecai perceived all that was done. Mordecai rent his clothes, put on sackcloth with ashes, went into the midst of the city, crying with a loud cry. It was illegal to go into the gate wearing sackcloth. I took it upon myself to write a letter to the bureau last week of the FCC and the judge. I've never been so happy in my life. I mean, all the little niceties and gentlemanly exchanges between our attorneys, we must deal with them when we're gone, and then we're left out. And we just sort of told it the way it was. My attorney from Washington, I didn't even let him see the papers before he got a copy when they got a copy. He called up and says, the attorney for the FCC was livid with anger and called me. I said, glory! Mordecai illegally went into the gate area in sackcloth. They took the word to Esther. She wanted to know because she was afraid for Mordecai's life. Why is he doing this? And she sent him some nice clothes to dress up. He said, no deal. Sent the message to her what was going to happen to her people, of which she was a part, and asked her to make an appeal. She says, don't you know? The law, if I go into the court of the king without him bidding me come, and he does not point the golden scepter at me, the penalty of death if he's displeased. Mordecai sent the message, think not. And that's the choice I've been trying to lay on people for a long time. I wish God would give us more Esthers, people that will recognize the Esther Band is not a new subject around here because I've covered these books before. But I wish God would expand it today as we be captured by the truth of what I'm saying. Nobody likes the danger, the exposure point, that action that gives you a profile in this battle brings. The natural tendency says, I can lay low and let the axe fall on somebody else. Church after church, in their secret closet as they watch this battle, are dumb enough to believe that they can escape. That if a sinner goes down, or the worldwide Church of God in particular, because that's not quite in the mainstream of the church in the view of many people, it won't get to them. Esther was in the very court of the king, and it's those in the church world that are a part of the king's court, the establishment, that so far have not had the guts to step forward, and this message is for them. Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, you know what's the matter with most of the church world? They don't really believe in the second coming of Christ. They don't really believe that Antichrist, as a spirit, is working in the land. They don't really believe that every day marches toward that unveiling of the personification on earth in earthly government of Satan's seat. They don't really believe that history is marching toward the day of judgment. They don't really believe that the only force to hold Antichrist back is the church. And they really believe that a marriage between earthly government and the Church of Jesus Christ can just go on forever. And as a result, they are blind to the fact that they, whether consciously or not, are helping to set the stage and are vehicles of the spirit of the false prophet who one day will deliberately help usher in Antichrist. They're dumb enough to think, though they belong to a different calling, as Esther was God's child, that if all of other children in God's family go down, they'll be spared. Because they don't really believe that the forces of earthly government, though populated by good men, unless the devil is resisted by the prophetic word of truth and obedience, earthly governments succumb to the devil's power and to the carnality of this world's view of things. The message is still the same for those that think a peace can be maintained with government at the price of God's word and freedom to serve God and render to God that which is God's. Think not that with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the rest of the Jews. Think not, because the Attorney General smiles at you now, if church freedoms are lost and churches come under the heel of modern Caesar's power, that you will escape. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise. And I want faith in the people that listen today. We prayed in July that God would answer our prayer. We haven't been like Joseph 17 years, 20 years, waiting for God's promise. We've only been 3 years and 10 months. But we prayed, as God led us in these books to a turning point, that God would do His work and not only bring new troops into the battle, not only bring new sources of revenue, but find in the higher powers of earthly government an ear that would respond to truth, an ear that would search out the real truth, an ear that would listen and exercise earthly power because of being exposed to someone that had the ear of that government and would listen to truth. Not the least of the reasons that the king who comes to the throne is able to respond in the time of Ezra and overpower the local bureaucrats in each area is this history in the book of Esther. Is the history that goes back to Cyrus. And we have to believe, as we preach through this book of Esther now, today, and continue in these books and as God ministers to us with that which is preached, that there is also an ear that will listen somewhere that is in a position, as Esther's in the position, to use the position she has to bring truth and pierce through that covering that the bureaucrats have that have never yet let us be heard above some local level. Somebody can hear and recognize they have the same responsibility as Esther. There are judges who listen to me every week. Most of them so carnal and so captured in their own ego, they too see a voice of independence and freedom as a threat, as the judges in today's world have become the mandarins of our society. But there are some that can respond to truth and will recognize what it is they're touching when they tread on churches. And one of those judges will hear and listen one of these days. Because of harassment of the Channel 2 news, other problems in Los Angeles, I've had to reestablish residence in San Francisco, which adds now even more to my pressures of time schedule. That means we have two forums now where judges listen and will be asked to rule one of these days on the subjects we deal with. There are senators. There are congressmen. There are people in power that have not lost sight of their roots in Christian heritage. One of them is going to hear the truth one of these days. And we'll have to face the question Esther faced. Mordecai was at the gate, unbending in his conviction. Esther had the position of influence. God had put her there. And there are some men in government in this land that can still remember it's God that put them where they are. Mordecai touched the conscience. Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether, let me tell you something. If they had the brains to know it, evangelical Christianity is still the majority in this land. There is not a representative anywhere in the states that we're preaching in. And there's not a representative in California, Senate or otherwise, that could not ensure his reelection by convening a legislative committee to investigate the Attorney General of California's harassment of churches in California today. They are dumb enough to think that the church people, because they're silent, are not the majority. But you let any representative convene a commission to investigate the Attorney General today, and by that act, he will ensure his election. I'd vote for him as a bald-headed monkey. Because if there's any front that needs truth today, that's it. There's not a senator in Washington with the harassment of the PTL Club, with the harassment of Faith Center, with the singling out of full gospel evangelical voices on television for harassment. There is not a senator in Congress that if he were to convene a committee to investigate the abuse of power by the FCC in its harassment and investigation of religious offerings and violation of the Constitution, that would not ensure his election. May God give him the brains to know that. But whether that's true or not, may God have one with the character to do it. God's still is in control. And unless this is the hour when Antichrist must come on the scene, and in that case we should look up, our redemption draweth nigh, we'll be gone. Unless this is the hour, then God's going to see to it that He, at His time, has His man in His place or His woman to help this Mordecai or these Mordecais who have taken our stand to help us out. What God's been saying since we turned the corner in the book of Ezra is that when God gets His faithful people ready, He is also working in other dimensions to bring His purpose to pass. There's somebody somewhere that'll listen to this. Think not that thou shalt escape in the king's house, just because you're there. If God's people come under attack, it's not the instruments of government per se that are doing it. They are under the hand of Lucifer and the spirit of Antichrist. There is no reason. You stop for 5 minutes. There is no reason for tens of thousands of dollars of tax money to be illegally spent to humble and forced to bow one lone preacher who picked no fight with any government anywhere and who answered every question to confuse their charges and prove them wrong, but simply will not let the state walk into the church that he pastors and violate the sacred confidence of his members. Now, of all the evils on television, when you turn those knobs one day with the sex, the violence, the lies, the hypocrisy and lies in every ad that goes out, from cars to Old Spice, actors lying as they play the act of the benefit of putting some Old Spice under your arm. Pray tell me how much real damage to society comes from a preacher talking to people who believe God's word and inviting them to put their treasures in heaven by paying the bill to keep God's word going. When the full budget of this network, syndication, plus 3 television stations, plus 1 radio station, 2 of the television 24 hours, 1 radio 24 hours, plus the church, the school, and all our missionary work, only cost $300,000 a month, and they pay a newscaster, one of them, more than that, for a few minutes on television, in carnal television. You calculate the wisdom and the sense of a limited budget FCC spending thousands of dollars to try to protect the people that don't want to be protected and stop the people that are giving for eternal purposes from giving, and after a year and a half of TTL and 2 years and a half here, they haven't been able to uncover one shred of evidence, one witness, one sworn testimony, and they're still trying to destroy 2 lone preachers, which is the only clean air being breathed into television today.
and try to tell me that human wisdom can't see that. It is demoniac control of Antichrist forces that are trying to silence the Church of Jesus Christ, but they shall fail. The God work is waiting on an answer somewhere that isn't willing to hide behind the door in the King's house. If now altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, because God has them in His hand. Oh, God, help Gene Scott. Help every minister of the gospel on television to not lose heart. Sackcloth and ashes may be our portion for a while, but Mordecai's word is, whether Esther speaks or not, God's going to find somebody. Now, let me tell you, you can reach into that 14th verse of Esther 4, and I can reach into it today, and make it ours, and hang on to it quiveringly, until death takes us to glory, if necessary, and you better believe I'll say, what happened, Lord? But it's still there for us to take. And if somebody doesn't pick it up and make it ours, it's not going to happen. Faith claims the promise. And Mordecai's promise is mine and yours. If Esther, the one that's got the first chance, doesn't act, God's got somebody. But thou, and this is the message to whatever Esther hears me now, but thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. Because when God gives the chance, you're never the same again. God's call is without recall. And when the truth of God's word comes across a man's life, and he has the opportunity act, and he doesn't do it, you're not going to get in on the victory that somebody else brings about. Thou and thy house shall be destroyed. Who knoweth, Esther, whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? I believe still, or I'd stop preaching today, in the power of God's word to reach life. I believe there is a judge at the Superior Court, at the Federal District Court, at the Federal Appellate Court, at the Supreme Court if necessary. I believe there is a senator, a representative, state level or national, that hearing these words will have to face up to one thing. Who knows for what he came to that position for this hour in history, just as literally as Gene Scott came to face him, to the kingdom for this hour. And when that spark is struck and God's man is found, one man can sway a 3-judge appellate court. We're not asking for anything but truth. Truth as old as the Constitution on which this land stands. One man with persuasive argument and logic can sway the justices. One man can start an investigation in the Senate or the State House. Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom? One woman came. Maybe it'll really be an Esther. Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? God placing his man or his woman in the king's house that God's work might be preserved a bit longer. That's it. Do you see the ramifications? Had Haman won, there would have been no finishing of the temple. There would have been no building of the walls. There would have been no Nehemiah. He would have been slain.
There would have been no John the Baptist. There would have been no birth at Bethlehem. There would have been no Savior of the world. Everything on one woman's shoulder that was placed in the king's house for that moment. God give us the grander view of things. I believe God's master plan for the world depends upon us doing what God sent us here to do at this moment. If you don't believe that, may God open your understanding. Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther bade them return to Mordecai this answer. Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan. Fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink. 3 days. Pray now. I want you to notice how God weaves the fabric. Why I can't stand Christianity that tries to make everybody fit the same mold. Mordecai could no longer or no more have done what Esther's about to do than he could have flapped his arms and flown to the moon. Mordecai was good at unbendings. Mordecai was the man that needed to be at the gate to settle the issue. Esther was in the king's house. She got there with beauty and with grace and a long back. Now it's Esther's time and Esther's technique. She doesn't have to wear the armor of Mordecai. You watch how differently she approaches it. But the substructure is the same. Pray. I'm going to be me now. I'm going to do what I have to do in my place, my way, but pray. Fast. 3 days. I also and my maidens will fast. And so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. I'm not going to wash my hands like Pilate. I'm going to go in and do my job now. You convince me. I'm in the kingdom for this hour. And if I perish, I perish. God find one person with that kind of character to listen to me today. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. Now watch Esther go to work. Man, what a different technique. She comes in. She really fixed herself up pretty. And she comes into the king's presence. One looks all it took. He not only waves the golden scepter, he says, whatever you want, ask me, I'll give you up to half of my kingdom. Listen to it. All I want, honey, is to just cook a meal for you and fix a banquet for you and Haman. That's all. Just, can't you see it? I haven't seen you for 30 days. I want to cook a banquet. That old buzzard. He was so happy. And he said, Haman, my wife is fixing us a banquet. Haman went Popeye. He was so joyful. He's running home to tell his wife. And you remember what her name was? Zeresh.
gold. First gold digger in history. And he's going home to tell Zeresh. And as he went by, everybody's bowing down to Haman. Ruined his whole day.
Haman went forth joyful and with a glad heart, but when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up, nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself. When he came home, he called his friends and Zeresh his wife and cried on her shoulder, told of the glory of his riches and the fact that he was having this banquet with the king and the king's wife. And yet all this, he says, availeth me nothing. So long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate, they can give him raises and pay. They can promote him at the Attorney General's office of the FCC. But they can have no rest or peace until God is broken. That's all they want. I mean, they come out to Las Vegas and they meet all the broadcasters and they say how great we are, and all the broadcasters scared to death of losing a $30 million or a $60 million license say, yes, thou art great. And they go back to Washington and a marshal shows up with the gall to hand in the midst of their very own crowd a lawsuit by Gene Scott. Saying, you buzzards are a bunch of crooks. You're breaking the highest law in the land. Hello? They go home to their gold-digging wife who says, honey, did you get a raise today? And they say, don't talk to me about that. Gene Scott, sir, just sued on me. Then said Zeresh and his friends, build a gallows 15 cubits high. I can still hear Sister Mabel Willett saying, isn't that human pride? Mordecai would have been dead at 6 feet. How come you have to build a gallows 75 feet high? I'm going to stick old Dean up there. Tomorrow, here's the gold digger saying, you build that gallows. Tomorrow, you go tell the king that Mordecai has got to be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet. And the thing pleased him. And he caused the gallows to be made. Now, God's timing. That's what I want you to see. I'm still in the text. I'm finally to the sixth chapter. The sermon I'll anticipate, God's hand. Isn't it accidental that old Ahasuerus couldn't sleep that night? I mean, of all the nights, that's the night. He can't sleep. And he can't think of anything that would make him sleepier than having bureaucratic documents read. Bring the chronicles and read them to me. Command them, bring the book, the records, the chronicles, and they were read before the king. Now, with all the chronicles to read, don't you imagine it was a pure accident? He just happened upon this passage. It was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door who sought to lay hands on the king. Remember that back there? Where Mordecai had faithfully reported. Isn't it an accident, you suppose, that it just happened upon that passage? God's hand. Same night. Next morning, Haman was going to tell him, hang Mordecai. That night, king couldn't sleep. Read the Chronicles and read where Mordecai had done this for him. King said, what honor and dignity has been done to Mordecai for this? Nobody in this land will do as much real good for the substance and fiber of the people in this land as the preachers that preach God's word. We're not the enemy. The very character that makes us not bow our head when God is being intruded in upon by Caesar is the character that will make us obey our God when we have to render to Caesar that which is Caesar's. We're not the enemy. And the king saw this. What have they done for Mordecai? Nothing. Well, it's daylight now. He's waking up. He says, who's here? Find somebody in the house. And the servant says, Haman just walked in. Isn't that an interesting coincidence? Well, bring him to me. Haman, what would you suggest that the king do to someone the king wants to honor above all others in his kingdom? Well, Haman says, boy, I got here just in time. He wants to do that for me. Give him the royal animal. Give him a royal robe. Let him bear your crown. And then get somebody to lead. Put him on that animal and lead him through the streets of the city. Say, behold, the king wishes to honor this man. And he sits there saying, any minute now, I get the crown, the robe, and the riding animal. King says, that's the best idea I could ever think of. Go get the animal. Go get the robe. Here's the crown. Go put it on Mordecai and lead him through the streets. Woo! I'm going to have myself a fit. Haman went home and told Zeresh, his wife. And like all gold diggers, when she saw another guy was riding higher than Haman, she's changing sides. And she says, you're going to lose. King and Haman came to banquet with Esther the queen. Esther said, what do you want? Esther said, if I've had favor in your sight. And notice how delicate she is. Oh, Mordecai said, get rid of this guy Haman, he's trying to kill me. But Esther says, if I found favor in your sight, and if it please the king, spare my life and my people at my request. We're sold, I and my people, to be destroyed. And notice how subtle she is. Talk about a PR agent. She says, I wouldn't ask you, honey, if we were just going to be sold as slaves. I wouldn't be bothering you. I'd just go as a slave. But we're going to be slain. I know you don't want that. Who's going to do this to you? Amen. King got up. So mad, he skulked out. And that snake tried to make out with his wife while he's in the yard. A typical bureaucrat. Oh, you're looking to that, aren't you? Well, it's there. I just am saying it a bit different. King comes back in, and there was Haman on his wife's bed with his wife trying to talk her into interceding for him. He said, you dirty, low-down snake, would you try to seduce my wife in my own house? What can I do with him? One of the chamberlains said, hey, King, just happened to be a gallows down at his house. 75 feet high. Hang him on it! Wowie! What about his house? Move the gold digger out. Move Esther in. Okay. Who shall run the house? Move Mordecai from the gate. into the house. Well, it gets better all the time. Put the king's ring on Mordecai's hand. And Mordecai, 15th verse, 8th chapter, went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue. You that know the tabernacle will recognize these colors, of blue and white, with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen, and purple. I'm back to Mabel Willits again. I still remember her that day in the jungle heat of Ben Alone. She looked right at me. She didn't know me until afterward. Well, she knew I was preaching, but she didn't know the first one. She said, "What do you want?" Only she said, "What do you want?" A little comfort and ease now that comes from bowing your head. Oh, the ring of the king. And a robe of blue and white and gold and purple over there. Man, I was ready to charge palm trees. And I've been that way ever since. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. King said, "What more can make you happy?" Well, there's still an edict out, King. There's still a court order out there that on a certain day, because they cast lots, people are out like bounty hunters going to kill the Jews and take their goods. King said, "I'll write another one. I'll eliminate that. Send the horsemen to every part of the land and turn it around and let the Jews slay the ones that came to slay them and take their spoil." And like old Abram, everywhere in the land the edict went, the Jews slew the bounty hunters but didn't take any of their spoil because God was their supply. And all the kings and all the local governments and all the local satraps, when they saw what was happening, helped the Jews out of fear. And it says a lot of people became Jews because they're scared. One of these days we're going to have people lining up like everything and going to church. And the Feast of Purim, at the order of Mordecai, was instituted that ever after, they would remember this day for 2 days with great joy and gladness, because a little woman in the place God put her said, "If I perish, I perish, but I will do what right." And because Mordecai had refused to bow his head. Here's the message. That's the text. God was in control. You understand why God got upset? When 600,000 of those people that would have been slain, if God hadn't spared them, refused to get up from their place when they would have lost everything and would be dead if it hadn't been for God's provision, and then when God's house needed their help, they refused to get up and move. He should have wiped them out, but he didn't, in his grace. We're in God's hands, folks. If God could use Mordecai and Esther to save his people, that the son might come, God's going to use us, and he'll write the last chapter, and we'll have our Feast of Purim.